All right, welcome back to a special edition of the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. We're taping this podcast today because there's a whole bunch of news out there in the NBA. You've got Carmelo Anthony potentially on the move. You've got LeBron James upset over what he perceives as perhaps a lack of spending in Cleveland. And as recently as this evening, Rajon Rondo has weighed in on social media on some of the dysfunction in the Chicago Bulls locker room. So we'll check in with Bobby Marks, the front office insider over at the Vertical, a guy that's got a lot of experience with NBA teams, former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets, I should say. All that and more next on the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. All right, a lot to unpack in a very busy day in the NBA. And no one to help me do that than Bobby Marks, the front office insider over at the Vertical, former assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets, and he joins me here on the podcast. Bobby, pretty busy day in the NBA, huh? Dysfunction, trade rumors, angry superstars, just a typical day in the league, right?
I'll tell you what, we must be at the end of January right now where everybody hates their teammates. They hate their team. We've got the guys tired and cranky, and now we've got Rajon Rondo, and I thought I had seen everything, Chris, but this might top it right now.
All right, let's begin with the first story to kick off the day, and that was the story reported by the Vertical, Adrian Wojnarowski, myself, that Carmelo Anthony, sort of adding on to the ESPN report of yesterday, that Carmelo was dangled in trade talks with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Knicks have also engaged the LA Clippers and the Boston Celtics in a potential trade for Carmelo Anthony. Talk to me about the machinations of a deal like this. I mean, what would have to happen for Carmelo, who makes a lot of money, to get traded to either the Clippers or the Celtics?
Well, I think if we start with the Clippers here, I think any type of deal for Carmelo, I think that trade bonus that's in play right now either is going to have to be amended or he's going to have to, you know, waive that off there because of how high his salary would be for Los Angeles taking that in. It would be around $29 million. Clippers are hard cap, so it will be tricky in that regard. And if we look at the Clippers roster, and if you take away Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, then, you know, that leaves you with, you know, J.J. Redick and Austin Rivers, it's Jamal Crawford, a Wesley Johnson, those type of players. And, you know, they don't have a first round pick until, you know, 2022 to trade. So I think it depends on what the Knicks' goal is. Boston has the assets. If you're looking at, you know, the teams that, you know, are in play, they're sitting right up top because they've got the expiring contracts. They've got a boatload of draft picks. If we take the Brooklyn picks aside, they've got a Memphis pick. They've got a Clipper pick in the future. They've got their own. And they've got the players to do it with, you know, expiring contracts. Amir Johnson, Tyler Zeller's contract for next year is non-guaranteed. Jay Crowder, we could talk about maybe even Jaylen Brown. So I think if you're comparing, you know, from an asset standpoint, I think Boston right now has a clear advantage.
Bobby, as we look at the trade deadline as it approaches, are we getting anywhere near kind of a point of no return with Carmelo Anthony? You know, you've had experience, you know, dealing with players and how they deal with trade rumors. Brooke Lopez, it seemed like he was traded every other week during your time in Brooklyn. You almost had a deal in place with Oklahoma City to move Lopez out there. Is there a point of no return you get to with a player, or can the Knicks, you know, decide, look, you know, we're not going to trade you. Let's try to make nice and figure this thing out.
Well, when you have a no trade clause, you know, I think it's hard to go back once you start putting a player out there. And I'm sure for Carmelo and his camp, you know, he was well aware of as far as if New York was going to get some dialogue with some of these teams there. And that's the reason why you have a no trade clause, because you don't want to hear your name in rumors here. But if there's not a deal to be made by, you know, the end of February, I don't see him being on the roster when we get to mid-July here, because, you know, this Knicks team, it looks like it's going to the lottery once again. We'll probably be in a rebuild. And if I'm Carmelo, a player in his, you know, early 30s, has 2 years left on his contract, I think, you know, for the best interest of himself would be to go in another direction here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think the Knicks, you know, they're not going to contend over the next couple of years. And as long as Phil Jackson is there, And look, Phil has kind of stoked the flames in all this over the last couple of years with his public criticism of Carmelo Anthony. Look, Charlie Rosen, Phil's former assistant coach, his ghostwriter, a guy he's very close with, has said that his criticisms of Carmelo Anthony are not reflective of Phil Jackson's views necessarily. You're hard pressed to kind of believe that. I mean, it seems to me and to a lot of people in the NBA that, you know, Charlie Rosen in this instance was kind of operating as a mouthpiece for Phil Jackson. Just makes it unlikely that these two sides can find common ground and succeed over the last couple of years of this contract. But when you look at the Clippers and Celtics, and let's just take those two teams in particular, you know, Carmelo Anthony as a difference maker. Let's say the Clippers don't have to break up their core four to get him. Let's say the Celtics only have to trade, you know, Jay Crowder in terms of impactful players on their team. Which one of these two teams does Carmelo Anthony make a real contender?
Well, right now for me, it's Boston, just because of how the shape of each conference is. If you look at where the Celtics are, they had a good win the other night against Houston, but had lost a couple in a row. They're sitting in three. You add a Carmelo Anthony piece, and of course, it all depends on what goes out as far as how much or how little do you have to, you know, gut the roster. And, do I put them on a level of Cleveland? Not yet, until I want to see them in a playoff series. But my hard thing with the Clippers is what we see out West right now. And I don't see them, even with a Carmelo Anthony, being able to beat a Golden State. And I think even with even San Antonio, we can talk about them. They've kind of certainly have flown under the radar right now, but you put Carmelo on there from an offensive standpoint. They'll get some separation from Toronto, you know, the team that they're kind of neck and neck with right now. And if you have, you know, himself, Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford at the end of the game, that's a tough big three to overcome as far as for some closers there.
Okay, but if you're Boston, what's too much to give up for Carmelo? I mean, Jay Crowder, I think, would go, and that makes some sense because Crowder plays the same position and his minutes would be limited in a situation like that. And I'm sure he wouldn't be happy stepping aside to be a backup. But what if the Knicks came back and said, you got to throw Marcus Smart into the mix or a draft pick into the mix? What would you give up in a Carmelo trade? And what wouldn't you give up?
Well, you know, I would rather give up Marcus Smart, because I think where we're going here with Marcus Smart is that you've got some decisions you're going to need to make with the Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley contracts coming up. Smart is rookie extension eligible next year. The likelihood is that you are going to draft a point guard in the draft because of how top heavy it is. And it could be certainly the number one pick. And from what I've seen in Rozier and just his, you know, some brief moments, I like his upside right now. So what I wouldn't give up, those Brooklyn picks at all. Would I give up some a future asset as that Memphis or that Clipper pick? Yeah, I would do so, even if it has to be your own pick, because you know you're going to have a good team for the next couple years. A player like Jaylen Brown, I would have a hard time, but I don't think it would be a deal breaker. But I don't think you can give up a Brown and Crowder combination right there. But when you talk about Crowder, I think from a number standpoint, as far as from a salary standpoint, you know, if Boston is going to entertain any type of talk, he might be the odd man out just to get up to that number.
I know you have to kind of be on the inside, Bobby, to know just how toxic it's become between Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony. But if you're in charge of the Knicks, knowing what you know about their roster and their potential chances down the line, I mean, how willing are you to take what would be tantamount to 50 cents, 60 cents on the dollar for a player like Carmelo?
Well, I think you need to know, figure out what your goals are. He's not the player from a trade value standpoint from, 2011 when I was in New Jersey and New York got in that bidding war. And, you know, you also have to remember it's about $10 million less than what it was, 6 or 7 years ago. And, I think you have to be, if you don't move him, where is this Knicks team going to be for the rest of the season? Can you get into the playoffs the way they played? I don't think so. You go into this upcoming summer with a roster basically intact outside of figuring out what your point guard position is, because it's either going to be Derrick Rose or you're going to have another go out in free agency if it's a Jrue Holiday with that cap space, and you're going to, have a draft pick. So you basically return the same lineup and the same coach. So how much of a difference is it from next year compared to where we are right now? And I say, if you know, the one thing you don't want to do is have deja vu a year from now and he's going to be on the table again. And I think if you're New York, I think you're best, you know, and I'm surprised they're doing it. I didn't think they'd get to this point. But I give him credit that they're actually going out there to feel what are the feelers.
Yeah, and Carmelo Anthony, it's still at this point, a 22-point scorer, shooting about 44% from the floor, 37% from three-point range, which is kind of right along the lines of where he's been, 83.5% free-throw shooter. When you look ahead the next couple of years, the last 2 years of Carmelo's contract after this one, how do you project him being? I mean, have you seen a significant decline in him over the last few years, or is he still able to be productive, reasonably efficient over the next couple of years?
I think he could be a number one on a bad team, Chris, and the bad team is a lottery team, and I think he could be a core piece on a very good team, a number two or a number three, where he is at the stage of his life. And I think you can almost make the argument with Dwayne Wade in Chicago, you know, guys who are at one time franchise players, all-star level players who now are in their 30s, who have a lot of miles on their, on their legs there, that are not that number one option anymore, that they can be at number two or three on a very good team. Yeah. If you want to go to a rebuilding team like a Philadelphia, who's, a little bit on the rise here, then yeah, he can be that number one. But I think at this stage of his career, I think winning kind of overcomes a lot of other things, where if you're the leading scorer or from a point production standpoint, that, he's won his Olympic gold medals. But I think the goal, I would think, would be for a championship here.
I have a hard time too, Bobby, believing that the Knicks would be engaged in these types of talks if they didn't have at least kind of tacit approval from Carmelo on a list of teams that he would be willing to go to. Maybe it's not a direct player to GM kind of conversation, or even an agent to GM type conversation, but wouldn't you imagine, I mean, in your experience, that the Knicks would have some kind of indication that the Clippers, Celtics, Cavs would be on Carmelo's approved list?
You'd have to. I mean, you don't want to do the legwork and all of a sudden you bring it back to Carmelo and his agent Leon Rose and basically do all that work, and it gets vetoed here. And Chris, I remember in 2011 when we went with we were dealing with Dwight Howard, and Howard didn't have the no trade clause, but he did, he was disgruntled at the time in Orlando. He had given Otis Smith the list of teams that he wanted to be traded to. We were on the list in New Jersey. And then after that, Orlando had given permission as far as to Howard and his representative at the time, Dan Fagan, that they can make contact with the teams to kind of get a feeling out process to figure out if there's a good comfort level. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same thing here with Carmelo there, that, if we get to, we get to a point where there's some type of structure of a deal that New York gives permission to either the Clippers, or if it's Boston, where that Danny Ainge can have a conversation with Carmelo or Brad Stevens or Doc Rivers, because right now you can't. But I could see that certainly happen when we get closer here to the deadline.
All right, let's move on to Cleveland, which is, in a real tailspin right now. They lose on Wednesday night to Sacramento, close loss, but that's still a bad loss when you lose to a team like the Kings. LeBron wants help, and he's looking to the front office. There's a report out there now that he's a little pissed off at ownership for not spending even more money, even though their payroll is about $130 million, and they were big taxpayers last year. What kind of help can the Cavaliers realistically get? I mean, it doesn't seem to me, Bobby, like their assets there, whether it's DeAndre Liggins or Kay Felder, even Channing Frye, if they want to move him, it doesn't seem like that's enough to get something in return.
No, and I think when LeBron spoke earlier in the week, he hit it head on, as far as it's a top heavy team. It's a more of a team that's built for the playoffs and not for 82 games. And where they are right now, you've got some dead weight at the end of the roster with a James Jones and a Chris Anderson who's injured. You've got your three young pieces who aren't even, in the rotation with Liggins, Felder, Jordan McRae there. J.R. Smith is injured. And it's in the games and the minutes have added on here, but I think the Korver trade was the last thing that David Griffin, their GM, can kind of pull the rabbit out of the hat there, as far as, because where you look at where their picks are right now, they've got a, you know, pick out to Portland this year. They've got a pick out to Atlanta in 2019, and you've got to wait 2 years to trade it. And all your second rounds are out too. You don't have a second round, and you have $750,000 in cash to deal with. And unless you want to move a Shumpert or a Channing Frye or a Richard Jefferson, those are the pieces that you're dealing with when you take out your big three and Tristan Thompson and Smith, who's injured. So I think you look at the Cavaliers, they're two different teams. They're an eight, you know, team that, a regular season team that they can get by with maybe 50 wins. And then when we get to the playoffs and the games are spaced out and there's no back-to-backs and you have more rest time, that's when you can kind of put it in another gear.
And here's the thing too. LeBron knows this. He's not a fool. He knows what the roster situation is. He knows what the cap situation is. He was completely accepting of Matthew Dellavedova getting that big contract from Milwaukee and the Cavaliers not matching and exploding their salary cap flexibility for the future. They were never going to go after and give Timothy Mozgov the type of money that the Lakers gave him after last season. You know, they've been kind of screwed by some stuff, no question. I mean, Mo Williams' retirement, that really screwed them. Chris Anderson going down took another big out of the equation. Look, I understand venting frustration, but I mean, I just don't know what you want this group to do. I mean, the best chance to me, Bobby, of this team getting any better is if a free agent winds up on the market after the trade deadline, someone like a Deron Williams or a Rajon Rondo, who we're going to get to in a second, Jameer Nelson, even in Denver, who might give them some relief at that backup point guard spot. That to me is the only way that this team gets considerably better. But the problem with that is too, I mean, you're looking at guys like Rondo and Nelson and the guys, and Deron Williams, who I mentioned. I mean, these guys, you know, maybe they would like to try to win a ring, but they're also looking out for number one too. And if their chance is to go to Philadelphia and help that team make a playoff run or someplace that they can play, I don't think it's necessarily a lock that one of those guys goes to play for the Cavaliers.
No, you're right. And I think when you look at this Cleveland team, it's almost similar to in Miami towards the tail end, where, you know, the back end of the roster, you know, they've traded so many picks. And in Miami, they traded multiple picks for him and Bosch in those sign and trades. And, you know, there's no first round picks on this roster. You know, the next one won't be until 2018, because you've traded them all the way. And I think when you look at the roster, they've got one roster spot open. There are, whatever salary you add, you're going to add on to your $27 million luxury tax bill. So can you be patient enough to the March 1st, you know, waiver buyout and see if there is a player that gets bought out that you can go out and sign? From a trade standpoint, I it'd be hard pressed for David Griffin to make a deal right now.
And here's the problem I think LeBron and the Cavs are going to run into. The new collective bargaining agreement is designed to squeeze teams down. I mean, they want to slim and trim the number of superstars on a roster to the point where there are teams out there like in Oklahoma City, which is trying to rebuild itself around Russell Westbrook and a more balanced, less expensive roster where you can spread the money out to a whole bunch of different talented guys. I think moving forward, this goes for Golden State too, moving forward, my read of the CBA, Bobby, is, you know, if you want to have, you know, three superstars or three max level guys and one, you know, really well paid guy, you can do that, but you better be prepared to have your bench be filled out with second round picks, first round picks, minimum salary type of guys. That to me is the wave of the future. You either, you know, go all in on a big starting lineup, or you spread the talent out and try to establish as much depth as you possibly can.
Well, and it's all about retention. And you can keep your main guys, your all NBA type guys, if you're talking about Golden State or Cleveland. Yes, you can retain them, but you're going to really need to rely on your personnel department when you're filling out your bench. And Chris, when we look at Cleveland, this situation is going to be like this next year too. And unless they make a trade, they'll have their tax mid-level, which will be right around $5 billion. But then they're going to be stuck with filling out the bench with the minimum players. So, you know, could we be talking about this a year from now? Yes. And I think when you look at Golden State too, you really need to hit on some of your draft picks. They don't have a pick this year, or a second round pick. So can what can you find as far as from the minimum route? The perfect mix, Chris, is when you have a core group of three or four players, and you also still have your first round picks. I think if you're looking at a team, you look at San Antonio. You know, you look at with Kawhi Leonard and Aldridge, and I know Gasol's hurt. You know, Deontay Murray, who's done a nice job as a first round pick. You know, Kyle Anderson, a first round pick. You're able to find Jonathan Simmons. You know, Patty Mills of the world, and they'll have their first and second round pick, the first round pick this year also. So that's the perfect recipe when you look at some of these teams going forward with this new CBA.
All right, let's finish in Chicago, Bobby, where the Bulls are trying to wrestle the title of most dysfunctional team away from the New York Knicks, the longtime title holder.
I thought Sacramento was still there, Chris.
Ah, sorry. Yeah, Sacramento. It's like a Royal Rumble of dysfunction. Chicago, to recap, yesterday, Wednesday, the Bulls, after a loss, Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler, in what seemed like a very coordinated, timed effort, blasted their teammates, the young guys, in the press, said, you know, they're not working hard enough, the effort's just not there, took some strong shots. Now, some of those teammates, they responded on social media. I mean, Jerry and Grant was one of them. There were a couple others, I think, that were out there. None of that really gained any traction. Well, Thursday night, there was some traction. Rajon Rondo, who hasn't had a great year, obviously, in Chicago, he went on Instagram and just tore into the Bulls, said his vets, and he put up a picture of him with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, said, and I'm paraphrasing, his vets would never go to the media. His vets would just teach you how to work. His vets would be all about, you know, winning and not trying to do this outside crap. He said he would never do something like that. What do you make of Rondo, you know, siding with the youth of the Bulls team and going up against Wade and Butler?
Well, I think if we rewind it a little bit, you know, I'm disappointed in the Wade Butler comments from the Wednesday night game when they, you know, they had that big lead and lost to Atlanta here. And I'm never a big believer in having a team meeting, but I think if you're going to have one after the game, is a perfect time, and you air it out amongst the guys in the locker room. So from that point of view, I'm disappointed for a guy in Dwayne Wade, who has won multiple championships in Miami, and a guy like Jimmy Butler, who Chicago thinks is their, you know, and is their franchise player. And is it a frustration level? Yeah, but it went on and on last night. The Rondo situation will be interesting here, Chris, because it will test Gar Foreman as far as who do you protect here? Do you protect your franchise player and a guy like Dwayne Wade, a future Hall of Famer, or is it Rajon Rondo, a guy who is on a basically an expiring contract with $3 million guarantee, who just basically blitzed your whole, you know, your two main guys? You know, I agree with what Rondo did out in the public? No. But do I understand his message? I do. And I think when we looked at this team in July, when it was put together, we all thought it would be certainly a playoff team, but did we think it was a championship level team? And we didn't. And we've talked about it, and you've had Rondo in Boston. He's an acquired taste. And that's where we get back to free agency. You know, teams got to do their homework on these guys and how they're, you know, going to fit in from a roster standpoint, from a chemistry standpoint, from with your coach. You've got a second year coach in Fred Hoiberg, and we see this so often where, you know, teams spend so much money and effort on the draft, and when we get to free agency, it's sometimes the name on the back of the jersey sells more than based what your personnel department has from an information standpoint.
Yeah, and look, Rajon Rondo's got a lot of flaws, certainly, and his issues at Dallas and Sacramento, they're out there for public consumption. But I don't agree with necessarily how he went about doing this, I think his message rings true. I mean, I don't know that it served anybody any good for Butler and Wade to sort of take this sort of holier than thou kind of position and point the finger at everybody else on that team when they've had their own struggles during this season. But I, you know, from an executive standpoint though, Bobby, how do you deal with this? I mean, you can't really suspend all three guys. I don't know if anything's a suspendable offense there. Do you cut Rajon Rondo? Do you try to sort this out in-house? What would be your first steps if you're John Paxson or Gar Foreman?
I'm having a team meeting with the group, with
airing of the grievances, an airing of the grievances.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm having a team meeting. You know, I mean, that's what I'm doing. I think the easy way out is cutting Rondo, Chris. I think that's the chicken way out doing it. Is it's just use him as the scapegoat because he basically exposed a lot of the problems that you have right now. Chris, you look at that roster. That's a, besides those two main, you know, with Wade and Taj Gibson, it's a roster built of draft picks on rookie scale contracts, second rounders, young kids, and everything. So if I'm Gar Forman, I'm having a team meeting and I'm hammering out and I'm who cares if it gets a little hostile in there? Will it do any good? I don't know. We're in the late January right now. We're past the halfway point. This team is kind of the boat is sinking a little bit here, but that's my first approach. I'm not suspending anybody. I'm not cutting anybody, but I want to see who. It's a lot easier talking to the media when your teammate's not there or putting something on Instagram when it's not face to face where guys can speak one on one, man to man, you know, and let it all air out.
I hope every day is like this, Bob. We can do daily podcasts if every day is as active as a day like this.
I thought you wanted to talk about the All-Star reserves, no?
Oh, yeah. We'll save that for... I think we can put a pin in that and hold that till next week to talk about the snubs in the Eastern Conference and the snubs in the West. We'll do that next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for the special episode, Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. My thanks to Bobby Marks. We'll be back on our usual day next week, next Tuesday, with our regular guest. As always, you can download archive podcasts on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, do me a favor. Leave us a rating, post a comment. You know I appreciate it. I'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.